the main pull for this industry is to go into a house at $100 and get it up to $400, $500, $600 through additional add-ons, and then pray they call you back in a year. While some companies practice deceptive sales practices, in and of itself isn't a bad concept.
CEOs often feel stuck in the grind of scaling their business and feel like they're missing out on the best parts of life, like family, friends, or travel. On this podcast, CEOs come to take themselves and their companies to the next level. Let's dive into the Millionaire Mind with your host, Dallin Schultz.
Hey, welcome back to another Millionaire Mind episode where I have some of the most successful business owners sharing what motivates them to get out of bed every morning and how they elevate themselves and their companies to the next level. And I've got another great guest joining us today. He was actually referred and we got connected from a previous guest we had on this podcast. So super excited to have him on and share a little bit about his journey. And you're going to want to listen in carefully today, because today what you're going to learn about is the importance of failing fast and how it brings success, and also having the right people on your team, whether that's you or someone else, with that vision to make that success happen, to make that business happen. So super excited for our guest today. A special welcome to Evan. Evan, appreciate you joining us today.
Dallin, thanks for having me, man. I'm happy to be here.
So if this is your first time listening in, appreciate you being here. I like to ask our guests to give you a little highlight of where they're at and who they are today. So Evan, why don't you share with our listener, take a couple minutes and just share who you are and what you do and who you serve.
Yeah. So anyone local to Arizona, I am an Arizona native, born and raised in Chandler, Arizona. What's made this entrepreneurial journey so neat for me is to get rooted and start here in the valley where I grew up, and to have a lot of people that were involved in my childhood be customers of ours. But 32 years old, got a wife and four kids. And about 5.5, 6 years ago, I started my entrepreneurial journey with a carpet and tile cleaning business called Coconut Cleaning. And while a lot's happened in the process to get me there, and since we started about 5.5, 6 years ago to get us where we're at, right now I'm just kind of taking it day by day, and we're just recently started to scale our business nationally.
Wow. You're expanding out of Arizona at this point.
About 6 months ago, we started in Salt Lake, and then we went to Dallas, then Nevada, Las Vegas, and then Austin, Texas, all in about the last 6 months.
Wow. That's something where I'm definitely going to want to get into, because I would imagine carpet cleaning business in itself is highly competitive. So what I'd like to talk about is not only your journey, but how you differentiate yourself, and not only differentiate yourself in a local market, but how to scale and expand into other markets. So this is going to be fascinating. Looking forward to it. So let's take it back, Evan. Appreciate that introduction and you sharing our listener a little bit about you. Was it always your lifelong dream to be a carpet cleaner?
No, it was definitely not, man. It's funny when I think about, you and I were talking a little bit before on the phone, and I just said some of your questions spark some memories from way back then. And I actually forgot that really the entrepreneurial journey started when I was 8. On my 8th birthday, my dad gave me 500 business cards, Green Thumb Lawn Service, a lawnmower, a trimmer, a bag, and a John Deere little tractor. And that's really where it started. And while I never wanted to be a carpet cleaner, I did that for about 10 years. And it really put in my mind that ultimately, like what a lot of entrepreneurs say, like, I want to work for myself and I want to make sure there is as little interference as possible between how I think someone should be taken care of and what I think I'm capable of doing in carrying that. So regardless what I was going to do, I always knew that I wanted to manage myself and not really have someone telling me what to do all the time, but also it didn't really matter what I was going to do. I just wanted to take care of people.
And this started, you said, at a young age. You said you were 8.
I was 8 years old. I did landscaping. I started going to my neighbors and I did that for about 10 years, same 12 houses.
Same 12 houses for 10 years.
I didn't know how to scale, so yeah.
But you had the retention, right? They stuck with you for that whole time. So you did that for 10 years, and that was your job through high school and summer and anything else along during that time, or was that your primary focus in those early years?
You know, in the early years, I mean, I played sports throughout high school, and you know, as it pertained to work, I had siblings that all had regular jobs after school. And so I was kind of that kid that I was the first in the family that played sports. And I always got the little hazing that you never had to go run to a job right after high school and go do homework at late at night. And so I was definitely grateful that what I had on the weekends provided me a means for gas money, a few dates here and there, and ultimately right after high school, preparing me for an LDS mission, which I went on about 2 weeks after high school, because I was one of those like 18-year-olds right before the senior year. So I was preparing for that. And for those that don't know, we have to pay for that ourselves. So that gave me another goal, and I was grateful to be able to contribute towards that. I went on an LDS mission for 2 years and came back, and I wanted to immediately get to work and keep going. But I did not know what I was going to do, because I didn't know how exactly I'd carry out that entrepreneurial spirit at all.
The missions that a lot of young men and women serve with the LDS Church, they're not cheap. What is it, like around 10 grand or so?
Yeah, it's a little north of 10 grand.
17, 18, 19-year-old person, a lot of us had never seen that type of money before. So it's a lot of work, but because of your entrepreneur drive, you were able to prepare for that. And I'm sure those 2 years helped really shape your life and set the foundation for what's to come. Did you get back into landscaping? Were your 10 clients, were they still waiting for you when you came back after those 2 years? Like, what did that transition look like?
You know, what's funny is that like there's a position in every mission called a mission president, and it's pretty much a more senior person, generally him and his spouse, that oversee the missionaries. And his name was Rick Woodbury. If you're in Utah, I'm sure that name is familiar to you, but Utah Valley University's business school was actually Woodbury School of Business after him. And so my last 6 months of my mission, I was surprised he kind of sold me on the idea of like, go to college, make sure you get insurance.
Coming from a business guy.
From an entrepreneur, man. I don't know what it was. I mean, again, I know he was looking out for me, but I looked up to him so much that I don't want to say I forgot what I've wanted all along, but I got home and I was like, okay, I want to date someone. I want to get married. I want to have kids. I want to do all that. But like, I definitely was in robotic mode. I started going to school at MCC here in Arizona, preparing for ASU, and a traditional path of like working as a banker at Wells Fargo. And it didn't take very long to realize that like, oh yeah, I don't like people telling me what to do. And I don't like people telling me when to show up and how to show up. Really, ultimately, like, it's so cool looking back how the dots all connected. But one of my buddies from the bank said, hey, my friend is starting a pest control company here in the Valley, again, Arizona, and they're looking for summer salesmen. It's a be your own boss kind of thing. It's like, hey, go take a neighborhood, go knock some doors and sell pest control. And that kind of reinvigorated that spirit of like, wait, so like, obviously these guys own the company, but I'm a 1099. That's when I started learning all like the business vernacular. And I got back into that. Okay, I'm going to show up maybe for a sales meeting, but I'm going to go out and this is my business, is owning this neighborhood and selling and getting as much commission as possible. And it was fun to see again, the pay come in that was congruent to my effort.
You experienced in that moment that there's no cap with that 1099, but I feel like that's a good stepping stone into business, into entrepreneurship, because you don't have all the expenses and stress of a business owner, but you still have to tap into that personal drive, that why. You got to get out of your comfort zone. You got to do things that you don't want to do. So I think that's an incredible stepping stone to that next level. And I know for me, my first experience in that space was being a real estate sales agent. At the end of the day, there was no cap to what I could achieve. And I was a crappy real estate sales agent. I'll tell you that right now. Like, that's not why I got it. I got it to transition out of my quit. I got it to transition out of my W-2 job. But in that moment, that's when I realized I needed to figure out who I was. And there was this whole discovery of personal growth and self-development and mindset that I never had to tap into previous to that moment. So you got home from the mission and sounds like you did some school, but then there was this opportunity to start selling pest control with your friend.
You know, again, I'm only connecting the dots backwards, so I don't want to jump too far ahead, but who my current business partner is and what I'm doing for Green Mango Pest Control, it was in their first year.
Wow.
And so that was another neat experience for me to, again, like to your point, like a 1099, most good companies will sell you on the illusion that like, hey, you're your own boss. And because you're 1099, we technically can't tell you your schedule, but like, here's what would give you the highest probability of success. What was cool for my journey is that they were coming to the last month of their first year, and they were anything but, and again, I say this now because I'm so close with them, but they were anything but organized. At the time, I'm looking back, I just remember thinking like, dude, like, I don't even know if I'm going to get paid. These guys are like, wait, so how many did you sell last week? I'm like, this many, dude. Like, hey, I sold this, but like, little did I know then that I know now that like they were doing their best. What happens in that pest control industry and what's common to most is they start with some small local business. You realize that maybe I'm not all about it if I'm selling 2 miles away from my house and it's 118 degrees in Arizona. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I've been out here 4 hours. I'm just going to run home real quick and then I'll come back out. And I just realized that like, hey, in order for me to find myself and to find what it is exactly I want to do, I was enticed by a bigger pest control company the next summer to go with them and to go out to Maryland and do pest control again.
Okay, so you went down this door-to-door sales, I'm assuming, is yeah. what you did for a couple summers.
Yes.
What was your experience like?
It was really neat for me to see the dichotomy of a newly started out business, self-funded, Green Mango Pest Control 12 years ago, and then to walk into a 10-year established $100 million pest control company where it's like, hey, if you sell this much, you're getting a Tesla, and anybody that sells this much, just going to Hawaii. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like this is the dream. The overall experience selling door to door, I would liken to my mission where I learned a lot about me. So you learn real quickly, if you don't like yourself, or if you don't have the best dialogue internally, you're going to find out real quick knocking doors or doing any job where you're left in a neighborhood at 10 a.m. Your manager's smart enough not to give you a car and says, hey, I'll come back at 3 p.m. for a quick lunch and then I'll drop you back off at 4 till 9 p.m. You find out a lot about yourself. And when I reflect on my journey doing door to door, I learned a few principles, but the ones that stand out the most are one, how I speak to myself is very important. Not necessarily just the manifesting, but like how am I my own cheerleader, how I take a failed door experience and do I learn from it? Do I re-go over where I got stumped? Or do I just kind of like, okay, whatever, like that's their loss and I move on? Like, you learn really quickly that most of the success that you can achieve can start right there in between your ears. That's primarily what sticks out when I think of my door-to-door experiences. Again, it's just the cliche where it's like, then the next summer you take a team out and it's like, you see the guys doing the same thing where it's like, hey man, where you at? How many doors have you knocked? And it's like, they're at a park. They walked a mile to go to Chipotle and they've been there for 4 hours. It's like, you just want to tell them like, hey, look, like, I know this is hard, but if you just systematically go through this pitch and knock this many doors, your probability of success is this, and you will make $40, $30, $60,000 this summer. It was definitely a catalyst for me to know that like, okay, I do have what it takes, but I'm going to have to dive into some books and I have to look to some people that have accomplished what I hope to have and start mimicking what they do and how they talk to themselves and how they associate themselves with others.
I think what you said there isn't spoken about enough in the fact of how we talk to ourselves. I've become fascinated with just the psychology and of how the brain works. And anyone that gets into business books, entrepreneurship books, you're going to read books that talk about that. They're going to talk about the growth. And one of my favorite quotes that really kind of hit hard in this space was, it was a book about talking positive to yourself, right? Which sounds kind of like, I used to make fun of these people when I was in high school. That was like positive self-talk, right? Affirmations, meditation. But in this book, this quote, he said, you will never abuse, you'll never be abused more by somebody than you abuse yourself. Talking about the verbally abuse, right? Think about it. Like, we've all been there. A lot of us may have played sports before or been involved in different activities. Take a moment and really think about the things you say to yourself. If you got a question wrong on an exam, or you missed a free throw shot, or you sliced the golf ball, right? Whatever it is that you do, think about that internal dialogue you have with yourself. If you had a friend or anyone around you that talked to you that way, would you be friends with them? But yet, we allow ourselves to talk to ourselves that way, and it is so damaging. Most of the time, we don't even realize that it's happening. Now, there's a book I read this morning, really short book. I actually listened to it on my morning hike, but there was one question they posed in there. That one question was the book. Like, and it was, what would I do if I weren't afraid? What would you do as a listener? What would you do if you weren't afraid? I know instantaneously one or two things came to the forefront of your mind, because it did with me when I read that. And you realize that those things probably aren't as big and scary as your minds make it out to be. But this fear paralyzes so many people. So going back to your experience, Evan, knocking doors isn't fun. Like, it's difficult and people are probably cussing you out, slamming the door in your face, but you have to learn to be resilient and you have to work that positive self-talk to keep going. So what would you say was the biggest thing you learned from your time doing these door-to-door sales?
I would say my biggest learning experience, and there's a quote where it's like, I think it's Isaac Newton said, like, essentially, if I've seen further, it's by standing on the shoulders of giants. When I think of my door-to-door experience and I think about, like, what was all that for? Because there was a lot of times where I'm like, this isn't worth it. I moved my family from Arizona to Maryland. I don't even know what I want to do. Like, I'm done in July. Like, what do I want to do for the other 9 months this year? Like, the successful door-to-door people, like, don't latch on to the pitch of like, hey, in the rest of the 9 months of the year, you can just do nothing. It's like, if you are something and you are about it and you make something of yourself, $70, $80, $100,000 in 3 months, the likelihood that you have the characteristics to go sit for 9 months, it's just not.
It's not going to happen.
That's what I found out, is that, like, I knew that I was sold into this door-to-door thing on money. And I realized really quick that money was going to get me options. And I grew up with parents that I seldomly ever use the word poor, because I've seen the pictures of other countries of what they have in their resources. And so I'm not so ignorant to say, like, hey, I grew up poor. But in terms of middle class, lower class, we were definitely lower middle class. And I had a father who is so centered on, look, life is about being with your family. And he always chose an entrepreneurial background, but he was always home by 2 or 3 o'clock. And so I thought growing up, like, oh, like, I want to be able to have money because I never had money. I want to have the house. I want to have the cars. And then I was a sucker, man. I sucked into this industry where, like, the guy came to a lunch pulling up in a BMW and I'm like, oh man, like, that's what I want. And I realized real quick from the few summers I did it, I was like, you know what? Like, money is important, but I found out what I want isn't freedom, but it's options. I knew right there and then that whatever I was going to do, it was going to give me the highest probability of being able to have options. And if one of the options was a nicer car, so be it. But the bottom line is I didn't necessarily want to chase money anymore. I wanted to chase things that supported what mindset I wanted and the ability to give. And I knew right there, again, I didn't know that I was going to go do carpet cleaning, but that's the segue into carpet cleaning actually is I had a church member call me in my last month of sales. He's like, dude, where do you go every summer? Like, your family bounce. And I said, hey, like, this is what I do. And he's like, well, hey, I own a local carpet and tile cleaning company here in the Valley. I want to start the Tucson franchise. Like, do you want to do it with me? And I drove my wife and kids from Maryland past Phoenix. For those not familiar with the demographic, Tucson's southern Arizona. I drove past Phoenix, didn't wave to family, and I drove right down to Tucson and started carpet and tile cleaning franchise with the current owner of a bigger franchise here in Phoenix. And I knew then that, like, hey, maybe this wasn't going to be what was going to give me the options, but I'm going to learn from someone who has options.
Other than the relationship, what was it that made you decide, like, hey, yeah, let's go for this, like, to make that pivot?
He was that guy that, like, in our little church or in our little ward, like, he was the guy that hosted ward parties at his house. And so even though I was gone for the summer, I was still there. And he was just that guy that, like, he drove around an old Cadillac, but, like, he and his family had a yacht. And it's like, he wanted what he wanted. And while he didn't care to, like, be flashy in certain areas, like, he had a nicer house. They seemed to travel often, like, on social media. It was like, hey, we're at Disneyland. Now we're in Germany. Now we're in the Caymans. And I didn't ask him all those questions, but I knew right away. I'm like, I don't know if you're totally honest. I don't know a lot about you, but the bottom line is, like, you seem to live a life that's centered around being with your family and going where you want to go. And if your income comes from starting this carpet cleaning franchise, I want to learn from you.
And at this point, you had already gained clarity on the life that you wanted. And so what it sounds like is that you saw a lot of your future self in this person and this opportunity. You didn't ask for it. It sounds like this was presented to you, correct?
Yes.
So would you say that the stars, timing, everything just happened to align and it just felt right? You said, yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Again, hindsight's 2020. What's so cool for me is that this guy dominated on the radio in Phoenix. My now business partner, but wasn't a business partner back then, who owns Green Mango Pest Control, Cameron, calls me and he's like, hey man, like I saw on social media you're on working over with this carpet cleaning company. Like, could you get me in touch with the owner? Like, I was curious if he could introduce us to the people at the radio, because we want to get on the radio. So here I am making these connections that in a couple of years is going to totally bless my life. But at the time, it was just like, okay, cool. I am working for someone that is doing the right things in the business world. Cameron and Dusty with Green Mango are now 4 or 5 years in. They're like, hey, the next step for us is pouring some of this money, this profit into a channel that's going to help us scale. And Evan, like, no hard feelings for ditching us after one summer, but can you introduce us to the guy that has all the radio contacts because his carpet cleaning business is on there? And I'm like, sure. And I put them in a chat and I forgot about it. But 4 months later, I'm hearing on the radio, Green Mango Pest Control.
Awesome.
On 104.7, 102.5. I'm like, oh, sick. Like, something came of that. And little did I know that was one of the biggest catalysts for them to like go from 20, 25 vans to or trucks to 70 or 80, which put them in a position to start these other service businesses, which later I would come into play.
Let's talk about that. So you started, you went down to Tucson, you started this franchise for this other company. How long were you down? How long did you run that for?
Yeah, it was an interesting dynamic. I want to be totally clear. Like, I wasn't burned in any way, but I was definitely under the impression this would be a 2-3 year thing. And his interest in me was not from a partnership standpoint, from a like, hey, here's the trade-off. I will personally mentor you for everything that you want. Just help get this business to this point. And within 11 months, I got it to that point. And he calls me, he says, hey man, like, love you. I'm selling out of Phoenix and Tucson and I'm building a yacht and me and my family are going to go sail the world. And he's like, the new owner's going to be down there in 2 days. I'm like, dude, I don't really care to go over the details, but like, I just didn't care for the new guy in my mind, even though it wasn't my business. So it's like, this is my little baby. And he kind of came in and probably through, whether it's insecurity or through his own vision, and rightfully so, he bought the equity. He wanted to start doing things as he wanted to. And it took me about a week or two to realize like, this isn't the kind of guy I want to learn from. And I bounced up to Phoenix, no job, and I knew what my stakes and standards were as far as who I wanted to learn from. And I did not want to start inhaling anything from someone that I knew right away, like, wasn't my style of a mentor.
That alignment has to be there. Any business relationship, whether it's a partner, even in marriages, that alignment has to be there. And you know when it's not. You said you noticed within a week, you picked up on it, that it just wasn't there. It's one of those things that's hard to put into words. And you can't always put it into words. And when you try to put it into words, you try to list off the logical reasons as to why it should work or shouldn't work. But in reality, there's a feeling, there's a vibe, there's an energy, whatever you want to refer to it as, that you pick up on and realize that the alignment's not there. Kudos to you for making that split sooner than later. Because some people would keep pushing because, I mean, you spent the last 11 months growing this, and it sounds like it was probably operating pretty efficiently and pretty well. So this was your baby and you were willing to walk away from that because you knew that the alignment, what you thought the opportunity was going to be, was no longer there. So this could have crushed you, and maybe it did short term.
It did.
But you're running a very successful carpet cleaning business now. So how did that experience play into what you've created over these last few years?
Full circle to the internal dialogue. While retrospect, I say I wasn't burned. That was the story I created for about 6 months here in the Phoenix Valley. I was like, this guy burned me. I was doing the 18-19 hour days and I knew it wasn't my business. There was never any misunderstandings there, but it was like, hey, look, like my thing's 2-3 years out. To be 11 months in, and when you're doing a business, like 11 months is a day. And it also is a couple years. And it's like the dialogue that I put myself into, it was not healthy. I'm grateful for supportive wife and kids that definitely were there. But like, I fell right back into the trap where it's like my brother, who's just my life hero, was a very successful in a big multi-billion dollar medical sales group. And he's like, look, man, like, I'm not saying come stay here, but like, just, I have a position that would allow you to work with me pretty closely. And he took a academic route, PhD in business, and took the executive route, like CEO stuff. And you know what? Like, if I am about learning, like I'll come learn from you. And I took some medical sales job, and where the connection happened is that like Coconut didn't start for about 2 years after I left this other carpet cleaning business. I got into this medical sales job. While I didn't have the best mentality, I walked through the sales practices they told me, and I ended up making like 150, 170 grand. So I was like, okay, like I wanted to learn from my brother. And then you see, I saw this end of the year check. It was like 40 grand. I'm like, okay, I mean, that's not a bad perk for learning from your brother and getting free lunch every day from him. And it definitely helped me get out of this rut that I was in of playing victim and saying, you know what? These entrepreneurs are, they're selfish. They're self-centered. They only care about money. This guy burned me and I'm just going to coast. And if I can do this job and work 4 or 5 hours a day doing medical sales and make six figures, like that's what it is right now. But I just knew deep down it wasn't who I was, and it wasn't, and I knew that it wasn't about the money. And one of the greatest days ever was my now business partner called me and said, hey man, like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just going to school and I'm working a medical sales job. And he's like, why? I'm like, I don't know. He's like, well, hey, look, like, I'm not sure if you paid attention, but in the last year and a half, like Green Mango really took off with that radio. We've started a security company. We started a pool company. Like, do you want to show us how to do a carpet cleaning company? And it was as innocent as like, I thought I was going to come in and say, yeah, go buy this kind of van, go do this. And I'd say about 45 minutes into the conversation, I laid everything out. Like, cool. So when do we start? I'm like, when does who start? It's like, when do we start? I'm like,
you didn't realize that was the job interview, huh?
Yeah. And I was like, I'm not going to do this. Like, screw you entrepreneurs. Like, take your money, go start your carpet cleaning business. And they're like, no. Equal partnership. I'm like, no catch. They're like, no catch. I'm like, and again, like I had that mentality where I'm like, you're going to burn me. Like, let me see some paperwork. And I was grateful for that due diligence. I think it kind of scared them because they were like handshake guys. They're like, what do you mean? I'm like, I want to see legal documents of an operational agreement that says we are equal partners. And I want to know what my caveats are and what your responsibilities are. And after about 30 days, we started Coconut Cleaning.
Awesome. I want to touch on, I would say, demanded from them in writing. Everything is sunshines and rainbows when you have these great, bright ideas and everybody's excited about the future. Crap can hit the fan. Stuff happens. So it's so important to have that stuff in writing up front. Because yes, if everything's going great, everybody's happy, that handshake deal is just great. Those operating agreements, those contracts, that's when things don't work out great. And nobody has a crystal ball. Like, everybody goes into business with the best intentions. And especially like going in with friends, I think that's even more important to have stuff in writing. Because if it's a friendship that you value, having that stuff in writing, in agreement, so everybody's on the same page, expectations are spelled out. When stuff does happen, at least you know you've already talked about it and you can refer back to that document. So what Evan shared with us right there, get stuff in writing. If it's a legitimate opportunity that has potential to grow, get it in writing. If it doesn't, okay, you didn't lose out on anything. But if it does, at least you have something there to keep going. So talk to us about the launch of Coconut Cleaning. You said 30 days after that conversation that you didn't realize was a job interview, You guys are working as equal partners.
Yeah. Again, I thought I was showing up to kind of just talk with them and say, hey, look, like this is what I do. And I don't know what you guys are doing. Like, if you guys are just having like multi-talented technicians that one day they're doing pest control, another day they're doing carpet cleaning, but it turns out they wanted to do this whole operation. And it was September 4, 2017 that Blue Van showed up at our office and we got going, man. And they said, hey, same grassroots approach that you did with the other carpet cleaning franchise, like, let's keep it to friends, family, word of mouth, and door knocking. And sure. And what was actually really neat is that the whole concept of what we call Hype Farm now was, look, let's take our very successful customer base of pest control customers that love our service. They love what we're about. Let's say that you are a sister company and let's get you in the door with some people. And so the combination of those marketing silos and door knocking and just calling my mom saying, hey, like, tell everybody at church, like, I started this business, like, help me out. And that was really the beginning origins. And what really is our bread and butter and what sets us apart that kind of became fully conceptualized and created was within the first 6 months, we said, okay, like, Stanley Steamer, they got their yellow truck, like, zero res, they say they have their water, like, ChemDry, what do we want to be about? And I said, well, the main pull for this industry is to go into a house at $100 and get it up to $400, $500, $600 through additional add-ons, and then pray they call you back in a year. And while some companies practice deceptive sales practices, in and of itself isn't a bad concept. Like, hey, they call us out for carpet, you know, Mr. Mrs., like we do couches as well. And we came up with what is now called our Coconut Club, which is a subscription-based carpet, tile, and upholstery cleaning service where, just like pest control, just like pool cleaning, we'll come out to your house quarterly. We like to call them seasonal cleanings. And for $99, we'll clean anything up to that $99, and you get 50% off any service you want in the house. And so our main goal wasn't going to be, let's get in your house, let's jack up the ticket and hope we do just good enough that, like, maybe you don't leave a 5-star review, but you don't leave a 1-star review. It was, we're committed to your experience in your home and ensuring that all the investments you make, from area rugs to upholstery or buying used upholstery, buying new carpet, tile and grout, whatever it might be, like, we are extremely committed to making sure that all your investments stay as clean throughout the year. And that's really what was for us something that really took off, because our customers who are accustomed to pest control of, like, hey, I just know my guy, Brian, comes out and does my pest control. We apply that same thing at Coconut and say, hey, if you really like your tech, we'll always make sure it's him. And so people leave us the garage door codes now and they say, hey, just go in and do my tile today. Charge me for anything over the $99 or whatever. And so we became obsessed with the customer experience and making sure that our customers, as long as they're here in the Valley, wanted to use us for any type of cleaning service.
What you're discussing and what you're sharing right there is what I refer to as a transformational relationship. There's transactional relationships. You're focused on the money. You're focused on just that one and done. Then you have the transformational, which is ongoing. And it sounds like with the model that you've implemented into Coconut Cleaning, you're facilitating and opening up the opportunities to create more of that transformational relationship, which is going to help you grow. So out of curiosity, what did it look like that first year revenue work-wise? And you said you started that 2017, so 5-6 years ago. So what did it look like that first year? Then where are you guys at today? And then where do you expect to go?
We're an open book. Once you go through the franchising process, you realize that, you know, at first you want to be private. You don't want people to know. But then it's like, once last year I completed the franchising process and you realize that really anyone can call and ask for financials and they're entitled to it if they're interested in certain things. It's like, we just got to let people know we're about it. And at this point, we're very proud of what we've accomplished. But I'd say, like, if I could cap off the 2017, really that 4 months, that was discovery mode. That was, I'm learning who my partners are. I can't explain, like, the dichotomy of being in an office of an established 7-year pest control company and not having the resources that are within arm's reach of, like, they have the soda machine and the putting and all this stuff. And it's like, that's not mine. Not only that, but it's such a mind play to think that, like, oh, I've made it. I walk in every day and I have all this stuff. It's like, no, this is Green Mango stuff. And I have the little closet over here.
That the closet under the stairs. Yeah. They threw in the freaking Harry Potter closet, dude. That's what they did.
That's what it was, man. And I respected. There was a part of me where I'm like, come on, guys. But it was like a broken desk, broken chair. I was like, well, hey, I need an iPad. They're like, cool. Like, which one of us three is going to pay for that? I'm like, I don't know. Because, like, this is my real introduction into an LLC. We have our bank account. And I started learning about cash calls in the first couple months. It's like, okay, like, here I am in franchise mode from the previous carpet cleaning business where he's like, hey, if you need it, slide the card. And now I'm like, well, hey, like, I need to go get this thing. It's a $4,000 tool. And they're like, we got $500 in the bank account. You're going to have to wait. I'm like, crap, this is your business too. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I can wait. So that September 2017, capping off the year, there was a lot of growth from my first real partnership, regardless of the operational agreement, personalities were introduced, and you learn how important communication is. But I'd say we probably did in that first 4 months, maybe 40 grand, maybe 30 grand. Because what sucked is, like, I'd call my mom, she'd have me go out to, like, a neighbor's house or so-and-so, but, like, what do they want? Oh, it's little Evan. Oh my gosh, little Evan, like, you're doing this now? Like, well, hey, hook me up. It's like,
everybody wanted a discount. Everybody wanted a favor.
Yeah. And it's like, you know what? This is a part of the process, but dang, like it's so not labor intensive, because I've had other people like, do you know what drilling is? Okay. For me, it was labor intensive, but I was doing $500-$600 worth of work at everyone's house for $100 because it was my grandma and it was a friend that I knew from high school. And there was that part of me where I'm like, hey, look, like, how about I give you this discount, but give us a little shot on social media, or hey, leave me a 5-star Google review. I reflect often on those first 6 months of Google review. Everyone's last name is Richie, man. Like Richie, my mom, my dad, my sister, like
everyone knew it was rigged.
Yeah. They were like, what is this, dude? Like, you guys look just like you guys have. And for those not familiar, like we have a brand. I will say this, my business partner that's responsible for marketing and brand is a freaking genius. He makes very non-sexy industries look sexy through his branding of not only from uniform to vehicle, but that first 4 months was a lot to take in. But 2018 was the real struggle year where that they found out, because I didn't really know that this was a very cash up front, cash heavy business. Every van is about $100,000.
By the time you buy it, fit it out, get all the equipment.
And they're like, dude, we could buy 3 to 4 pest control trucks for that same thing. Each truck will do $15,000 to $25,000 a month. You're saying this $100,000 vehicle could do about $20,000 to $30,000 a month, but like, it's quadruple the expense for us. Okay. Like that's what it is. And so even as we started to scale, we're like, the cash wasn't there. The lending wasn't there. And we ran into some real problems really quick, where I'd say about 6 months into 2018, I was told by our then controller at the time that I had 6 months of runway until we were out of money. He said, look, at this point of growth and at this point of spending, you have 6 more months until you guys are out of business. And it was embarrassing for me, because like my biggest problem was, these guys are successful in pest control. Like, you're supposed to make me successful in carpet cleaning. And they're like, dude, no, like, sorry to burst your bubble, but like, we're providing the opportunity and you can have our customers, but like, you have to show up every day and you have to make this happen. And so 2018 was the year of like, okay, here's what our prices are going to be. Here's what our customers like about us. Here's the very difficult conversations I had to have with my first few employees. I was so nice to them up front because I was overcompensating for what little I had. And I'm like, this is actually what I'm going to do now. Like, we can't go to Chili's every Friday. We can't have like the little breakfast every Monday morning. We're going to have to cut back on the silliest expenses to be able to like get down. And that's a principle that always sticks out to me, is just, I was so vulnerable naturally and very transparent that my first 4 employees are still here with us 5.5 years later, because they saw that fear in my eyes, but they saw like, hey, look, we're going to get this done. And they appreciated the transparency, and they showed up every day with me, and they worked really hard. It was something else.
I'm sure it's incredible to see the growth. If you don't mind sharing, what did Coconut Cleaning, what did this most recent year look like for you?
So the most recent year, we were just north of $5 million in revenue. So in our fifth year.
And you're just in the last 6 months, just opened up in multiple markets.
Yeah.
So what do you anticipate or expect to happen over the next 12 to 24 months with those additional markets?
So I guess to serve as a backdrop to answer that, COVID for us was the greatest thing that's ever happened. We went from 5 vans to 20 because everyone was like, I don't want to get sick. Come in and clean my house. But do you have to come in to clean my house? We're like, yes. They're like, can you guys wear a hazmat? We're like, no, like it's 118 degrees. Like, can they wear a mask? We're like, yes, because it's so normalized, but like, it's so hot for them. But that year, 2020, was a year that was unlike anything else. We had more calls and customers than we knew what to do with. We had to seek additional funding with an investor because we were outgrowing our capital. And it was something really cool to go through, but through a lot of tender mercies and a lot of really long days and really hard work, we got to the point where we are now, which isn't partnerships nationally. I took the franchising process and used 2022 to work with attorneys for about 9 months and start those documents. And what was so cool for me is that I had so many talent guys come to me that didn't know me. They just knew someone that worked here. And they were like, hey, look, like I love it here, but like I need to grow. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't want to do partnerships and I don't ever want to personally guarantee another vehicle in my life. And so starting a new LLC where they're going to ask for my personal guarantee on every vehicle, I can't do it. So I took the franchising model that took about 9 months. And so what we're hoping for Coconut Phoenix this year is about $9 million in revenue. Wow. And then our national franchise, we're hoping for just around like $700,000 to $800,000 on the national level through royalties.
Wow.
From the other franchisees.
Yeah. I haven't looked into too much depth in franchising, but I've heard it's a lot of work, a lot of time, and can be a lot of money. So as we start wrapping this up here within this franchise model, what is it that your franchisees, why would somebody want to go with Coconut Cleaning?
Everyone has floors. Everyone has carpets. Everyone has upholstery. Like, so what I learned really quick over the last few years is that when you have people's attention, you can do most anything you want to accomplish in business. And what I found out through our branding is that we catch people's attention. And the more I see other carpet cleaners go up, they get the little rinky dink van. I'm like, dude, you guys got to learn faster. Like they get the little rinky van. They put out a little article in a newspaper, just like Stanley Steamer, and nothing stands out. But we have these vans that catch people's attention. And when we have their attention, we've learned through different marketing tricks and trades to be able to have a quick call to action. Where we see a van, hey, we have a QR code on the back of every van, call us for a free cleaning. And so what has been the coolest part about Coconut Cleaning is that I've been able to totally implement the process of give, 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 which is most of our customers through most of our marketing actually start off with a free cleaning, no strings attached. And that is unlike any company I've ever seen. And so when
it aligns, sorry to interrupt, it aligns your interest with theirs because people don't know what they're getting for the carpet cleaner. So your model is let us come in and prove to you, let us prove ourselves. And then from there, we'll see what happens.
Yep.
You don't see that in the service industry.
No, it's like, hey, let us come check your pipes and it'll be $69. And then everyone knows that that is to add the additional upsell, or maybe a garage company says, hey, let us come look at your garage only for $29. But you know what's coming after that is the upsell. And we're saying, look, 3 rooms of carpet, 2 rooms of tile, no strings attached. Let us come out and show you what we're about. And we have about a 55-60% close rate on most of those customers signing up on our residual cleaning service. And then we actually see anyone that doesn't sign up, we see 94% of them within the next 6 months that just call us and they're a paying customer. And when we put those stats out on a franchise disclosure document saying, look, the price for these acquired customers is $10 to $20 and the return is anywhere from a job average from $300 to $500. And again, most important, 5-star reviews, no trouble with the BBB, no trouble with like, hey, this is a bait and switch. We literally will come out 3 rooms of carpet, 2 rooms of tile. Hey, just so you're aware, if you want to sign up for us to come out, here is our price sheet. This is what you can always expect. Like, I always want our customers feeling like I paid $200, but I feel like I got $500 worth of cleaning. And that model alone has caught like the interest of people that I'm very humbled to even say like are even interested in helping us scale national, just because we've been able to figure out reciprocity in what people want and apply it to a little carpet cleaning service that seems to work very, very, very well.
And it comes from a space of wanting to give and to serve. And some of the most successful people I've met, some of the most successful people I've interviewed on this podcast, what do you think the root is of all their success?
They want to give.
They want to give and they want to serve. Once they figure that out and they stop focusing on the money, they stop focusing on that BMW that pulled up to that lunch appointment, and they focus on the difference that they can make in any industry, right? Like, people need their carpets cleaned, but that doesn't mean you need to give them a shoddy experience. You can still give them a good experience and align your interests together and put them first. And it sounds like that's what you guys have done. Evan, we're out of time, but dude, we didn't even get into the franchising model and the whole reason for the subscription process that you're going through. I think we need to get you on again in the near future, maybe next year, once we get, because you just launched this franchise model, correct? Let's have you on again in another year, and it'll be Coconut Cleaning 2.0. And we can get more into the franchise model, what that looked like, what it took, in case there's other listeners on here that are considering that. And then also the impact that it had. Because I'm sure there's going to be things that you'll probably learn and tweak and stuff over the next year or so as well. So I'd love to have you back on and talk a little bit about that.
I would love to, man.
Awesome. Well, absolutely incredible. It's just such a cool story and such a cool journey. And you hit the mindset piece. Like, this podcast is called The Millionaire Mind, A Journey into the Mindset of Successful Business Owners. You hit the nail on the head with your story. So thank you. Absolutely incredible. So as we wrap this up, there's four questions I like to ask every guest. Number one being, what is one absolute book recommendation for those looking to scale and further develop their millionaire mind?
I put it right next to me. It's Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink and Leif Babbitt, man. The second I realized that most everything I want is within my control, and the realization of most everything in your business is your fault for good and bad, that single-handedly catapulted me to go out and get everything I want.
That's a badass book. If you haven't read it and you're listening, go out and get it. It is an incredible book. So Evan, what has been one of your favorite quotes that you've embodied and lived by?
The limitations of my language mean the limitations of my world. And from employee communication to spousal children communication as an entrepreneur to marketing communication, the more I've become obsessed with the ability to articulate what it is I'm experiencing and what it is I'm hoping to accomplish, the broader my vocabulary has become, the broader my reach has been able to get out with people that are like-minded interests. And I've been able to very quickly get through problems that might last other people days, weeks, months. I've been able to articulate them very fast, create a solution using all the proper words put together. And I look forward to learning a lot more on how to continually communicate from an interpersonal standpoint, but also from a business standpoint as well.
You need it in order to run a successful business. You absolutely need it. So if there was one thing that you could share with fellow business owners that are beginning or simply trying to get to that next level, what would it be? What's Evan's golden nugget? Like, what do you know now that you wish you knew then that you could share?
I wish I would have learned the ability to manage my expectations from a standpoint of how what I expect from people around me. There's a difference from what you expect, but also how you anticipate people will respond and what people will do for you. And I wish I had the ability back then to do what I do now as far as how I manage expectations and how I go about delivering what it is I think is a good service as well as leadership to my people through the ability of expecting most anything that can happen will happen, and you will get hurt a lot less and you will bounce back a lot faster.
I love it. Evan, how can our listeners learn more about you or Coconut Cleaning?
Say me, I'm actually a fairly private person. If they go to my Instagram, there's really nothing out there, but Coconut Cleaning, we have Instagram at Coconut Cleaning Co. as well as our website, coconutcleaningco.com. And hopefully we do a marketing that we're going to find anybody listening as well.
Awesome. This has been an incredible conversation with Evan. And if this is your first time listening, I'm so glad that you tuned in. People have been asking me what my company does. So since I have you here listening to my show, I'll share that with you now. So my company partners with busy professionals just like Evan that are looking to experience significant tax savings, have more to invest, and even reinvest their hard-earned capital. And we work with other successful business owners like you by offering them opportunities to invest alongside us in large apartment deals. At Rev, we found that the most successful business owners have a strong desire to give and to serve. And we simply provide the vehicle to enable them to grow and preserve their wealth so that they can give of their time and financial success more abundantly and freely, however they see fit. If you've been wanting to get involved in apartment investing, but have been too busy to figure out where or how to start, then you can find out how I could serve you by visiting InvestWithRev. That's investwithrev.com, and schedule a 15-minute discovery call. It can be overwhelming vetting the right investment and the right operator, but at Rev, we make apartment investing easy. Evan, dude, thanks again for coming on the show. I really enjoyed our conversation and look forward to future conversations and for sure getting you on in a year or so and other opportunities to work together again.
Looking forward to it, Don. I appreciate your time, man.
And to our listener, remember, you can't have a million-dollar dream with a minimum wage work ethic. So go out there and earn your win for today, and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Hope you got value from this episode of The Millionaire Mind, a journey into the mindset of successful business owners. If you want to get results, you've got to take the right steps to get there. Dallin hosts a free weekly educational webinar focused on teaching you how to start investing in apartments so you too can experience the benefits of real estate ownership without doing any of the heavy lifting. There you can gain insights, connect with others like you, and ask Dallin all your burning questions about how you can start owning apartments today. Go to themillionairemind.us. That link is in the show notes.